Okay, Sean, so we just kind of finished the first several methods of determining value. We're about halfway through. So what I wanted to do is take a minute from your perspective. Let's just do a really, really quick recap on what we've covered. And then we're going to start getting to more meat and potatoes. I just want to encourage everybody, stay plugged in, keep taking notes. We're about halfway through these methods. But once you have them, they will be your building blocks to understanding and ultimately applying these principles of value to change your life.
And again, just like Charles said, and please be as patient as you can be, throughout the rest of this seminar, in every single part of this, you'll have to come basically back to this CD. So you can't get away from this CD. And so because this really is part of the process, this is where most people actually miss it. So it's not as necessarily entertaining and those kind of things. But if you don't get this part of it, going to the next part makes it much, much more difficult for you. So just to recap just a little bit, some of the different methods is abstraction method, paired analysis, cost approach. Then you get into your highest and best use analysis, which has consideration of what is physically possible, legally permissible, financially feasible, maximally productive. Then you want to look at your life cycle charts, which is growth, stability, decline, and renewal. And a couple of keys on the next part is to really kind of bring a general basis on abstraction method. One of the thoughts is it's value based on what is missing or that has been removed. So if you will take that as part of the analysis, and again, like on paired analysis or paired abstraction, it's based on its individual parts. So in other words, I want to compare like for like. So the next section we're going to get into is supply and demand. And there's, to me, four general basis of supply and demand, which is desire, location, personal preference, and perception. So this is a subject that really relates back to you and for what you're doing and those kind of things. Is whatever you're doing, whoever you are, whatever your preferences are, one of the things is it's based off of people's belief on how desirable you are, where you're located. You can go from one location to another and you have different worth. So if you go from one company to another company, they'll pay you different. Why? Because you have a different worth to them. There's something that you might know that sets you apart. So this is how it's beneficial for you. But see, this is supply and demand also comes with its own analysis. It's considered, in the real estate term, it's a particular form. It's called a 1004 MC, which is Market Conditions Report. So that gives me a basis of some consideration. And so I'm looking at an overall location. So that's how it starts. What is your location? So in a particular organization, it could be a church, for example, where is your church located? So you may have one level of desire or one level of preference or expectation or demand in that particular location. But the second you move to a new location, you have a new demand. And so you may be more desirable or even less desirable. If you go to a church that is only 100 people, you can be really important if you're the top 10 because, well, you're of the top 10. But if you're in the top 100 in a church that has 20,000, you're probably still not nearly as important. And so, again, because those are location. Also, it's based off of perception. So just because you live in a particular area, if that area is known as a bad area in real estate, sometimes we're not allowed as appraisers to comment on if we think it's a good or bad area. And plus, too, what I'll tell people is I don't have to comment on if it's a good or bad area The only thing I have to comment on is what people's reaction is to that area. So it's really irrelevant. And in real estate, their preference is marked as dollar signs. So you can cross the street. For example, you can go up into D.C. and on one side is Maryland and on the other side is Washington, D.C. And on one side of the street, the houses are worth $200,000 and you cross the street and it's worth $400,000. Why? Because there is a district line there. And because that line is there, it now has a new location. And so therefore the perception is different. And plus two, the legalities are different. And so therefore the second you cross that line, you step into new legalities. If you step into new legalities, you have a new demand. And so that demand, one location is more desirable than the other. Why? Based on people's personal preferences and perception. So perception and personal preferences can be changed. This is why it's so beneficial. It's because you can live in one particular area and go to another area and people's perception of you is different. If you don't think this is appropriate, and I'll bring it back to the Bible in this particular example, but if you don't think this applies to everybody, it applied to Jesus. Jesus could do no mighty work in his own hometown. Why? People's perception. They said, is this not the carpenter? So just because you grew up in an area and you can't get people to listen to you, you need to realize if they did it to Jesus, they'll do it to you. So don't think for just a second that this is abnormal. Some people's perception of you will never change no matter what you do. And so you need to be aware of that. And so you also need to be aware sometimes you have to go to a different location. And that's also okay. Sometimes what you desire will change. And so based on what you desire and your desires, that gives you different personal preferences, which then again change your demand. For example, if my demand or my preference is I don't want to work 40 hours a week, well, somebody's demand of me may be limited. So my supply that I have available is also limited. So therefore, in a marketable sense, I may not be as good in that situation as the next guy, which brings us to our next subject, which is called substitution. So principle of substitution is based off of a mentality that something else is there that is in comparison. Again, go back to match paired analysis. That match paired analysis, that's where your substitution is. In other words, I own my home because I just bought it 3 months ago. So what's a good substitute? Well, the guy that bought the other identical ranch next door. So it's considered a substitution. And so I can't have that one because it's already owned, so I want this one. And so when you understand these principles coinciding with each other, then you can actually cause them to work in your benefit. And if we can't apply this in a way that is beneficial to us, then what's the point in information? Because if it doesn't actually work in your life and it can affect your relationships, it can affect your job, it can affect your income, then what's the point of having information that doesn't change your life? So in this principle of substitution, there has to be something that's in comparison. Well, if you're in an area where a particular position has been filled, but they need another one, if you're identical or greater, then you become the substitute for that position. And so if you're a substitute long enough, you become of greater demand than the previous person, which then gives you promotion. And this is where lots of times people say, well, I can't get promoted. Well, that's because nobody demands you to fix anything. Why? Because you don't have any knowledge or you don't think? Because why? You're a bad substitute. You have a substitute teacher. My kids, I have a 13 and a 16-year-old, and so they get substitute teachers. Well, lots of times the substitute teachers do not have the same educational experience as the regular teacher because they're a substitute, and so therefore when they go to teach the material, they don't know it to the same degree as the original teacher, and so the students say they're a bad substitute. And so it's not that they don't have knowledge, it's that their demand is not as high as the normal teacher, but they're a great substitute because they have some form of knowledge. Now, other times my kids have said, oh, they're the best substitute ever. I don't know why they're a substitute. And in one particular example, the substitute teacher knows like 12 different languages. She's teaching Spanish, and she has like 3 master's degrees, and she does it for fun, not because she has to, but because she actually wants to. So she's an excellent substitute for that particular position. So she is at great demand. Why? Because she can teach 12 different languages. So this is why this knowledge is sometimes so important, is because it can change the demand people have on us. And what our substitution value is. For example, a substitute for gold could be, say, rose gold. Still gold, but it's a substitute. Some would say, okay, well, silver is a bad substitute. Why? It doesn't have the same worth. It doesn't have the same consideration. It doesn't have the same color. But some would say, okay, well, I will take this for that. I think Solaris is a particular color. It has the color of gold. It's a substitute, or plated is a substitute for gold at a reduced price. But its demand is so much less because it is something that has been fabricated. So it doesn't have the same value. And why? That's back to supply and demand, which requires personal preference and perception. See, people have been told gold is very valuable. Matter of fact, one of the particulars is my wife worked fine jewelry for several years, and they were having some diamonds and those kind of things. And at one point, your darker diamonds were actually less valuable. They were not considered as valuable because they were not as clear. But now colored diamonds are really making a huge comeback. And so therefore the value has exponentially increased because of their perception and because of people's personal preferences. Why? Because the marketing has went insane to say, hey, you got to go buy all these colored diamonds. And so now it's chocolate diamonds and those kind of things. So that's where the supply and demand changes everything. And sometimes in order to change supply and demand, they will change the name of something. In other words, it's the exact same thing it used to be, but they change the name of it, and so therefore it has a whole new value. A lot of your entertainers are known for doing this. They have two names, their real name and their stage name. So they change their value because they change their perception by changing the name. So it isn't that the product changed, it's that people's perception of the product changed because the name changed. And so when you understand the principles of supply and demand, Hootie and the Blowfish would be a great example of that. Darius Rucker, he could not go from pop to country until he changed his name. When he changed his name, he changed his perception, so therefore he went from a rocker or a pop guy to a country singer, all because he changed his perception. And so this works in literally every single arena. And this is where, again, guys, I really want you to come back to how to consider some of this. And so we went through a lot of these different principles. We just went through kind of supply and demand. And guys, you can spend literally hours doing research, learning every individual part of this. So I don't think I'm teaching this stuff in its entirety. I'm giving you some knowledge, some general basic platforms where you can take this information, you can take some basic understanding, and really start to dig in. Because each one of these, such as just location, there's hundreds of books on just location. There's hundreds of books on perception and mind and understanding the mind and how we see things and changing our paradigms and all these things. So there's all these books, there's all this information, and most of it by and in itself is actually pretty good. And so it's not wrong to learn all these different materials, but if you don't know how to apply anything that you learn, it'll never do you any good. And so we're going to touch on the last topic in this set of series. And after you've done all these other things and you understand what you're substituting against, what the general expectation or demand is for the area, what people are after, what they're wanting, you've realized that you're physically able to do it. It's legally possible or permissible that you got enough money or that it's going to make enough money. And you've realized that these key things are in the area. You realize that, hey, this is growing. We can cause it to be stable. We know how to renew it so it never stops growing. And so we know how to now avoid decline. And if we're in decline, we know how to cause it to go back up. And we've looked at some of these different methods, such as abstraction method or allocation method and paired analysis and cost approach. And so we know what others are willing to pay for it. We know what it's worth all by itself. We know what the actual cost is. Once we've kind of done that basic consideration, the last step of this is called a weighted analysis. The reason why a weighted analysis is so very important, it's really the last consideration. And this is where you take all your facts, all your information, all the things that you've learned, all your gut, your intuition, leading, all those things, and you take it and you put it into one thing, and then you actually assign specific numbers or specific qualities to each one of them. And in a weighted analysis, that's where you would say you would take your sales or comparisons of individual people based off of all this information, based off of all the demands, and this is where you actually assign a percentage to. So you'd say, I give Apple 20% consideration against B Apple because I think B Apple is worth 50%. And so to relate it in real estate, what I would do is if I had a ranch that was 1,500 square foot and I had two ranches that were also 1,500 square foot, I may give them 50% of the consideration between those two. Well, I could have six more, but they're, 1,200 or 1,100 or 1,900 square foot, and they're just so far off on each side, and I might give them, 5 or 10% each until I reach a total of 100%. Whenever you get done with your weighted analysis, you always have to equal 100% because that means that you're 100% determined that this is how you've decided that you're going to make your decision. If you can't get to 100% and you're saying, hey, I don't like this one, or this one, then you may need to just wait until you can find out some more facts, until you get something that says, hey, this is what I'm trying to do. And so when you get those together, you get that weight together, and you've looked at it, this is where you actually give the overall weight to the individuals based on your facts. So this is how you determine what it's actually worth. If I go here, what am I worth? If I go into this new position, what am I worth? What are they after? What is their demand? And if I go to school and do this, how much am I marketably worth after I get done with it?
The thing I like about the weighted analysis, Sean, and I know you've got more to teach on this, but this is the beginning of understanding how you can actually impact value in your life, whether it's change your own value, change the value of things that you're doing or things that you're looking to get into or purchase or buy or do. What people may not realize is once you learn how to actually determine value, perceive value, is then you begin to understand what goes into it and you can change it. And that's going to be one of the big things we talk about at the end of the training here. So people really need to get this, because to me the weighted analysis is kind of the grandfather analysis of all these other ones.
And to bring back the same comment that I've said several times, and I'm not necessarily done saying it until it, because you have to get this. What is true? How do you know it's true? And what else is true? When you have done a true weighted analysis properly, it will almost always destroy most people's perspectives and opinions. And I think that's such a crucial thing, is because I've done real estate, I've done teaching, I've spent time with people in a lot of different things. And almost always, if you get rid of, again, all biased, if I can get rid of all your personal preceptions and judgments and misconceptions, and if I can get rid of every bit of it and go back to the real basic roots of what something's really worth, then you can actually put numbers to it. And people don't really want to do this sometimes, because sometimes it can be quite sobering. Is, you know, and I'll use myself as an example. I'll tell on myself quite frequently in any particular thing, as long as I believe that it'll help somebody. Is, in my first marriage, I had this mentality that I was worth all these things. That I was such a good guy. I was this. I was that. And it's not that I was necessarily not some of those things. But the problem was, is I had all these opinions based off of what I was. But if you were to stick me in comparison against some other guys, I wasn't doing so hot. And people say, well, how can I make it different? Well, how are you weighting? What are you adding? See, because the second you add something, it changes the weight. Which means you can change the weight. Which means you can change your equation. And like I've said, if I can change what you value, I can change your life. And so when we do that by changing what addition we're making, by what we're adding to the equation, it sometimes can be the make or break of any successful deal. And in Franklin Covey's 7 Habits of Highly Effective People, he says that the situation always has to be win-win, win-win. Everybody has to win every single time. And if everybody's not winning, then the question is, what are you actually adding? And if you're not adding to them, then you are a subtraction, and don't be confused or shocked when you have lost your value. And they no longer need or want to be around you. Because all you have actually done is managed to take, because you stopped adding to them, and so therefore your weight changes. Now, how does that work in business? If you're doing a particular deal, they call it soft value. What can you add to the equation that makes the deal more appealing? And you can look at things like the art of the deal, different types of speaking, habits, you know, just different habit books of how to add things to the equation. So how you talk to people, how you shake their hand, how you smile to them, how you give them a hug, how you're there for them, how you build a relationship over years. And it can't be about the deal. It has to be about the relationship. Why? Because you need to care about people. Because if you only care about the money, you're not really adding anything to them. You're only trying to take from them. And this is why a lot of people in sales aren't good at sales, is because all you're doing is taking from people. You're not adding anything to people anymore. And so, therefore, when you come back around, you can't get anything because they have nothing left that's been added. And so this is where it's not about the cost. It's about what the value is, what has been added, what has been contributed. What are you actually putting in them that's changing their life? And if you never bothered to ask them, then how would you know? So to go back to the business deal, what are you adding to them? Well, that's marketable. You can look at it. You know, if it's a blender, if it's the Ninja blender, or it's a new way of cooking. See, people don't buy the product. They don't buy the specifications. It's 2x2x2. They buy what's the benefit. They want to know, what does it add to my life? If you don't let them know what it adds to their life, then why would they support you? And really, people buy those things because they want to know what it adds to them. Does it save them time? Does it give them more influence with people? Does it put some more money in their checkbook? Does it give them some more knowledge, some more information? So if you're not adding something into these people in a particular way, almost always your company's not going to succeed. And even if you are adding something, if you're not being a good substitute against other people, you'll still end up losing out because all your other competitors are beating you because you're a bad substitute. I look at you, and you provide the same product as the other guy, and you're twice as much. It's not that I have a problem with paying you, but if it's the same, now if you do better work, then that's different. Why? Because you are adding something that the other guy isn't adding. But lots of people want to act like their work's the best, but they never bothered to ask anybody if their work was the best. And so this waiting, all this waiting is based around this principle. What are you adding? Every time you add something, it causes a separation between one thing and the other. And that's where that abstraction is. What is it worth all by itself? You know, for example, Warren Buffett made the comment that there's three things he always hired by: integrity, intelligence, and energy. He said if they don't have an integrity, the other two will kill you. So integrity was the highest value to him. And it's actually one of the rarest commodities in people. Because lots of times people do not have integrity. They have a desire for a paycheck. A desire of a paycheck makes your substitution very low, because integrity cannot be bought. Somebody's check or somebody's loyalty that is only to a check can be. But integrity is a self-desire that is self-motivated within oneself, that is a desire to have character when nobody's around. And as my pastor has said most of the time that I've seen him, is you never know what's in the toothpaste tube until you squeeze it. And integrity is proof that there's character. And so, but you don't get to know that until you start to weight some stuff. Until you actually really start to stick it side by side with stuff and get real honest that you are or are not a particular thing, then what have you actually proved or added? So what would be a practical way to do that? If you were to take your business, everybody wants to reinvent the wheel every month. And what was always amazing to me is I would go look at very successful companies or different things like that, and I would say, okay, well, why don't you look at what they're doing? Well, I don't want to do what they're doing. But they're successful, right? Yeah. So you're going to try to reinvent the wheel because you don't think the wheel should be round anymore. And then you're going to try to push it uphill, a hill that you've never been up, based off of an opinion that is only to yourself, which means that you're not considering, you're not weighing anybody else's opinion. Why are they so successful? What made them successful? If they're the most successful company in your town, there's obviously something you can get from them. And I'm not saying that you copy people. It's that you realize and take some weight, some consideration to what someone has done that makes them successful. There has to be a key. And so if you're not actually paying attention to anything it has to say because of your own bias, then you'll miss the key every time. And for example, a lot of people say, well, I don't like somebody that's critical. Man, I love critics sometimes. You know why? Because most of the time they will give you the answer in their critique. For example, they'll say, well, you can't do that. I'll say, well, why not? Well, you're not educated enough. Oh, well, that's a simple fix. I'll go get some education. Well, you can't do that. You're not articulate enough. Well, great. I'll go take a speech class. You're not intelligent enough. You're not this enough. Well, I can go study. So lots of times your best critic is actually your next promotion. Because your critic will tell you you can't do something, and almost always they will tell you why you can't do it. Well, you can't do that because you don't have enough money. Well, great, I'll get some money. Well, you don't have enough supporters. Then I'll get supporters. So they'll tell you what your answer is. Well, you're too mean. Well, I'll become nicer. And it doesn't mean that you change who you are as a fundamental person. But, for example, I have been known to be a hard person throughout my life. Everything is very black and white. I don't really believe in grays because everything's a mathematical formula. So if I don't believe everything's gray, I can tend to be very hard, harsh, and some people would say hard-hearted. So everything is a very black and white issue to me. Well, just because it's a black and white issue doesn't mean that I can't learn how to be gentler, more kind, more soft-hearted, more considerate, have more empathy, and a better listener. So I'm not object to the critique, but that doesn't mean as a fundamental person that I still don't believe that everything's black and white. I just become better at being articulate about it and or learning how to shut up because nobody asked me anyway. And so one of the things in relationships we'll talk about is just because you know something doesn't mean they'll receive it. And even if they will receive it, it didn't mean they asked you. And just because you know it doesn't mean you should say it. And so these are some core aspects, and lots of times people don't actually want to know the answer. They just want to vent. And so with that being said, with all the information that you have, all the things that you learned, if you will learn to apply these features and these aspects and really apply them, it will absolutely change your life. It'll change your weighting. It will change how you look at things. It'll change when people talk to you. It'll change their opinion. It will change just every single aspect about everything that you do. You'll make better decisions. You'll get better advice. You'll have better mentors. You'll have better friends. You'll have better relationships. This is absolutely for every single person, for them having success in their life every single day.
Sean, that's got me very excited. I will tell you that. I guess what we're going to do at this point, I bet you everybody's brains are simmering. And as I said, I've already taken notes on this more than once, and I'm taking more notes again today. So I think what we're going to do is we're going to take a hard break and let Sean catch his breath and lozenges and whatever he needs. And then we're going to come back and pick up on the last two points of the knowledge concept of value. So I want to thank you, Sean, for your time and everybody for being here. And we're going to take a little break, and then we're going to come back and finish up the knowledge of value.
Thank you so much, and you have a blessed day.